Maybe it's addiction. Maybe it's self-sabotage. Maybe it's one mistake that changes everything. Or maybe it's years of pretending to be someone they're not. If you've ever thought, how did I get here? I don't even recognize myself anymore. I want to rebuild, but I don't know where to start. This is the episode for you. Because rebuilding your life isn't about motivation, it's about identity. And Cameron is here, and I want to just dive right into it because I am so excited because I love what you do and you do it so well. Now, I want to ask you a question. When someone hits rock bottom, what actually is happening beneath the surface?
Well, I can really only speak for myself and tell you where I was. At that point, I was not just physically depleted, but emotionally and spiritually as well, right? A lot of people will they'll speak about people are manipulative when they're down there, right? They're rock bottom. They'll tell you they'll do something or they'll engage with a program or they're willing to do this, and then they start to get into it and then they walk away or quit. And the truth for that about that for me was that I just didn't have any gas. I was bankrupt. I didn't have anything left to give. And so every time I did commit, I hit rock bottom and I was like, yes, I do want to change. I really meant it. But after a couple of weeks or months or whatever, it was just too much for me. And I went back to where I knew I could at least survive, right? That stasis where I didn't have any pressure on me anymore.
Now, nobody wakes up and decides to wreck their life. So how does it actually happen?
It's a long spiral downward, right? So for myself, and I'm really glad you hit on identity because that's really what kept me locked into it for over 20 years. At first, it was a coping mechanism. I was trying to cope with some childhood trauma, right? And I was using on the weekends, and then eventually it grew into more, and it was keeping me at a complete stasis, right? I wasn't moving forward, but I was able to cope with what was going on in everyday life. But eventually, I hit the end there, and the system got a hold of me. And the truth is we do the best we can with the resources we have in the systems that we created, but it's usually not the best. And so once I got exposed to the criminal justice system, I started to identify like that, right? Just real briefly, I came back from the Gulf War. I fought in Desert Shield, Desert Storm. I did not suffer some battlefield trauma. My trauma came from my childhood. I don't want to disrespect any of my veterans, but I came back and I started to spiral out of control because that stuff had become untenable. And as I spiraled into the criminal justice system, I began to identify. I began to pick up different mindsets and attitudes and stances, right? Like the victim stance. Suddenly, I couldn't believe how many victims I met when I went to prison. I went to prison and everybody had a victim story about why they were there. But that locks us into that attitude, and then we stay looped into that identity.
It's so true. Now, is it a slow compromise? Like, is it trauma?
It's still, well, for me, it was. I have seen, and I would like to say probably predominantly, it's people who have been traumatized are more susceptible to addiction, period. It's just a way of, as we talked, it's a way of coping. But I've seen other people that just wanted to experiment with drugs, and alcohol get caught up and swept up into the lifestyle. Neuroplasticity says that by thinking alone, we shape our brains, right? By thought alone, you sh actually shape the neural network of your brain. And so long-term addiction literally hardwires people's brains to be addicts. And recognizing that, I think for myself, that was a moment when I came to realize that it taught me how I had to actually intentionally rewire my brain. Like it was something like, okay, they're not going to do it, expecting the justice system or any other places to do it for you is just letting someone else program you.
Right.
So when we get to the bottom, we go, okay, this isn't working. And then you learn the tools. Hey, you can become anybody you want. Want to try again? Yes. And we just start at the basics, right?
Yeah. I love that.
One of the programs I went through taught what they call the cognitive loop, which is thoughts create feelings, which then generate behaviors, which gen then get generate results, right?
Yep.
And most of the system out there tries to just work on behaviors. Don't do drugs, don't commit crime, don't beat your wife, all these different behaviors. And they really don't focus on the thinking and the feeling part, right? And
Yeah.
that's where I got down to the grassroots with myself, and I started to change my thoughts, which then led to new feelings, or actually starting to actually experience my feelings. One
Right.
of the hard things to learn was at 50, well, at 43, was that I was emotionally 15. When I got clean, at 43 years old, I realized, man, I was still reacting emotionally like I was a teenager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Makes sense. Is it like chasing validation in a sense?
I think that's really what kept me into it. So, Abraham Maslow once said that one who is good with a hammer thinks everything is a nail, right?
Yeah.
And so when I got into the drug world, I realized that I could be somebody with using my aggression and my anger, and therefore I just started using that as my primary tool, right?
Right.
For survival or success. And so we do become dependent on those things, and then
Yeah.
realizing that it doesn't have to be that way.
Right.
I don't have to be that man.
Yes.
I still have that tool in my shelf if I need it, right?
Right.
That's still back there. One of the things we try to talk about in my program is that I don't like the word change.
Yeah.
For years, the system said you need to change, and it made me
Yeah.
feel like I was going to be somebody fake. Like,
Right.
you know what I mean? I was immediately resistant to it because I
Yeah.
want, like, you mean I'm not going to be me? This is me. How? What do you mean? You want me to change into somebody I'm not? So what I try to use is the word grow. Right. I don't want you to change, brother. I want you to be more than you are today. I
Right.
want you to be the most whoever you are. Right. We
Yeah.
don't limit yourself to this one little part of you.
Right.
You're way much more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So true. Now, is chasing like it, you know, when is it chasing like validation? Is it also like, does it feel also like a numbing pain too?
You mean the addiction?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can remember specifically a time where I had been clean for probably, I don't know, probably 5, 6 months, and I got put in a really bad situation where I was around drugs again, and
Right.
at that point I knew I was going to use. I knew it, like it hit me all at once, and I started to cry. Like I was sitting in this room full of people, and I'm just starting to cry because I knew this was going to happen and I couldn't stop it.
Yeah.
And it was so painful. It does get painful. That's where the shame and the guilt come in, right? That's one of the things that keep us locked into addiction is, and in the
Yeah.
darkness, right? Is because there is such a taboo, and there's such a, I used to hate those, what were they called? There was these old DARE, the DARE posters, right? Remember them from our childhood? And it would show the
Yeah.
addicts, and they were all like that stuff on their face, and they were all beat up and ugly. And I was like, they completely dehumanized it, right? So I put
Yeah.
this stigma over it. And so everybody just wants to hide it. And I think by doing that, it drives it into the darkness. And
Oh, yeah.
then it basically, decays and gets worse. Yeah.
Oh, it definitely does. You know, at what point does someone like disconnect from who they really are?
I don't think there was a definite break. It was a slow breakdown of my character. So,
Yeah.
like I said, I came, I really, I did a little, I smoked some weed and drank some beer in high school, But I really didn't pick up things until I came back from the Gulf War. And my marriage started to fall apart and I spiraled hard, right? And got involved with methamphetamine while I was still in the military. And it was just these little things that we call it death by 10,000 paper cuts, right? It's because it just little chips out of your character. You know, maybe you just don't, you tell somebody you're going to call them back and you decide not to call them back, or, and you blow this person off, or somebody gives you extra change and you don't make it right. Just little things start to deteriorate and then they become big things, right? And you finally, after literally, well, here, I'll just share this part. I came back from the Gulf War, struggled in on reintegrating back into society. And then I started getting speeding tickets. Then I got in trouble for a domestic. I got a domestic. And then it spiraled. And another year later, I got a possession charge. I was already using at that point. Another year later, I got caught in a stolen car. Right. So really, I started using methamphetamine in 1991 after I came back from the war. By 2011, I was committing aggravated robberies. So 20 years. 20 years of active addiction and spiraling into the justice system. I earned a bronze service star while I was in the military. 20 years later, I'm committing aggravated robberies. That's that slow decline of character.
And you know, it's so common. You hear stories like that all the time, especially from veterans and people who have been in the military. They come out and they're just like a different person. You know, it's just you know, a lot of people go through, you know, I know it didn't happen to you, but a lot of people when they go through the military and they are in active service and they're doing the tours and they come back home, they have that trauma itself, they don't know how to deal with it. And then they're put into the real world when they leave the military and then they have to transition over to real life and they just don't know how to do it. There's such a high percentage of people who go to drugs, you know, to deal with those issues and to deal with the pain from the injuries they endured also.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I began to question everything after the war. I saw the violence, I was exposed to all of that. And then I began to spiritually question what's really going on. Why would God allow this? What's going on with all this, right? And I think that part of it unstabilized me so much that I couldn't suppress the trauma from my childhood any longer, right? That stuff started to come up and I couldn't put a lid on it anymore. And that's when I started to use.
I feel like life is kind of like it's like a pot of boiling water. You know, when that water is boiling, you can only boil for so long before it kind of flows over the pot, you know. And I think that's a lot with a lot of people. You know, and so how does this connection like show up before things start to like actually fall apart?
Broken relationships, right? One of the things I talk about specifically is like being honest, right? Honesty. Principle, we start to our character deteriorates. And so like I was never like the kind of a liar that would come up and just tell like some crazy lies. I used to be a fighter pilot, you know, things like that. But what I would do is I would exaggerate, I would minimize, I would lie by omission. And really the truth is that those are all lies. It is actually not living in reality. And that's when you do that yourself the most disservice. It's not about actually like that you got over on somebody. It's that you actually start living your life as if this thing is true and it's not true. Right? You're basically building the block, you're building your life with false material, material that doesn't even exist. So for me, that's one of the ways it started to show up. And of course, your immediate the people around you, your friends and your family, they begin to pick up on it immediately, right? And so that starts to isolate you now. Now you have to control who you're around because, for lack of a better word, your bullshit stinks, you know? Right? Like you might believe your BS, but these people don't believe it anymore. And they'll cause you to face it, right? If you're around people that know the truth, it puts the truth back in your face, and
Oh yeah,
you're
for
like, I don't want
sure.
to deal with this.
100%.
The great news, though, is that the opposite is true, right? So all these things that tear us down, the opposite is exactly true too. Once you start to intentionally align yourself with principles, you can rebuild your character.
Oh
Character
yeah.
is not something you're born with. It is
No.
something you create and maintain, right? You
100%.
can manage this. And for me, and for what I've seen in my professional life now, they're everywhere. Like what I mean is like maybe you and I have different principles. Like maybe for you, respect is more important than, say, courage,
Right.
or maybe diversity is more important than loyalty or whatever they are, right? There's these things that, and that's
Yeah.
great. Everybody should decide what they want there to express out of their life. But once you figure out what that is, align with it. Let
Yeah.
it become like guardrails in who you are.
100%. I agree. I agree so much. Now, when someone loses a career, a relationship, reputation, or sobriety, the real damage isn't external, it's internal. So they think
Truth.
I'm a failure, you know. So why do people, you know, fuse their identity to the worst chapter?
Well, like I said, I think it's a progression, right? They start to, the relationships start to deteriorate. And for, like I was saying earlier, I was emotionally, spiritually, physically bankrupt, and I couldn't stand the weight of my actions, the consequences, right? All this stuff that karma is real, guys. Like you cause and effect, the law of cause and effect does exist. And so for myself, the weight of the consequences of my own actions began too much for me to handle. And so I began to shift more and more away from it. Because I, not because I was like being manipulative or evil or, but because I couldn't take it. I couldn't withstand it. I was trying to save myself by not accepting responsibility. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get it. I get it. So, how does shame and the secrecy keep someone stuck?
Well, it's taking responsibility, right? So there's a difference between shame and guilt, right? Okay. Shame is I'm a bad person, right? Guilt is I've done a bad thing. And that's a big shift. A lot of us deal with shame. So I'll be real honest. I'll get real with you. So one of the things that kept me locked into addiction for a long time was my shame surrounding the fact that I was an abusive and neglectful father. That's the truth. I didn't like beat my kids, but my kids saw me get violent. They saw me get violent with their mom. They saw me get violent with other people in the house. They saw me lie, and that's abuse and that's neglect right there. But my children still loved me, right? They still would, even though when they were afraid of me, they would still come and be with dad, and I would focus on that little thing, and I wouldn't want to accept it. No, that's not right. No, my kids love me. That's not real. And that took decades for me to realize, hold on, Cameron, until you accept responsibility for this thing, you are not going to be able to move past it. And it was a big, big moment, right? And to be able to look in my daughter's eyes and be real and accept that from her, right? And not like the truth is I don't get to decide if they're willing to forgive me. Like that's them, right? The only thing I can do is be accountable for it, be real with it, and accept responsibility. They have to do their own process, and that's the truth. I lived in a very disruptive, dysfunctional family. My mom was in an addict, and that's kind of where I learned my coping mechanism. And then I passed it on to my children, and that's the truth. Like, and now at my age, as I'm 15 years in recovery, and I'm watching them struggle, right? Knowing that their struggle is my failures as a parent, truth, right? And I have to own that.
Do you
So to answer your question, for me, that getting out of that shame was to be first. So let me come back a little bit, because this is really important, and I think your folks need to hear this, especially if you're dealing with a loved one or somebody else who's going through these problems too. This may not seem like the answer, but at first, you need to help them fill their cup. If they're in a point where they can't accept responsibility for their actions, they lie constantly, they manipulate, or at least they appear what you think they're being manipulative, it's because they are so broke. They're so lost themselves. And so starting to remind them of the good things they've done in their life or who they used to be. Hey, don't you remember that one time you did this for Aunt Sally? Dude, that was so cool. We used to talk about that for years. You know, remind them of the goodness that they have also done in their life, right? Start to fill their cup so they can get strong enough to start to slowly accept responsibility for the things they've done. Right? It doesn't happen all at once. You don't just fill your cup and all of a sudden you go, man, I've done all these bad things. I'm so sorry. It's little by little. Just like we got down that way slowly, you build back up out of it slowly as well.
That's so true. Now, do you think rock bottom is necessary or is it just common?
It's just common. I think that because our society has become so individualized, right? Everybody's an individual now. They get to have their own path, that there's not a lot of avenues that keep them from falling. So there's not a safety net, a social or familial safety net now, where the family actually comes together and says, no, you ain't doing this. You're going to live with your cousin in Nebraska for the next year and figure this out, kid. You know, that's not happening anymore. So that people do, unfortunately, but I don't think it's necessary. I've seen people figure it out. I was a slow learner. I had to go the difficult path. I just don't get it. No, do it again. I just don't get it. But there are people who can get, they realize real quick this is not the life they want. And they make a correction. One of my mentors, Jim Rohn, he's got this great quote. I think he took it out of the Bible, but he said that you should live your life hot or cold. And basically what he says is, what I think that means is just go hard at whatever you want to do, right? And then they say, well, what if it's the wrong thing? And you go, and he says, well, then you'll find out real quick. You know, and that's truth. You know, for 20 years, I just screwed around and did little things and slacked off and nothing happened. And then as soon as I went hard left, I figured it out real quick. I needed to change. Yeah.
I love that. Now, being authentic sounds nice, but what does it actually mean in recovery? Like, is it radical honesty or is it like taking responsibility or setting boundaries?
All of the above. And I think redesigning who you want to be. Really. And you know, I think it's funny. You mentioned earlier, we were talking earlier about how you wrote some stuff down, right? You started with a plan. Me too. Like, this is actual copy from jail 15 years ago. This is me writing down what I really believe, who I want to be, what this is all about, and taking it out of my head and putting it down on paper. And then I was able to look at it and go, okay, this is wrong. This I want to keep. This I believe in. That's not really how it is. And basically refine it, right? Because now it's not just in my memory. So I practice by being honest. Like, just like that moment, in order to be honest to your listeners and watchers about being an abusive and neglectful father. That's hard to say. The reason I keep voicing it is because I have to remember that. I need to continue to take ownership. You just don't take ownership once. You continue it. It's a process. And that's what keeps me in recovery, is the willingness to go back to my shit and say, look at this shit. Isn't this horrible? You know?
It's basically letting people see the real you.
Yeah, and being okay. That I really think, like, addicts are like, they're what can recovery recovered addicts are who can really help our society. I think our society's getting really spread apart,
Yep.
really bipartisan, really one way or the other. And
Yep.
I think that as people get more in recovery and find personal development and wellness and all of these great things
Yeah.
and bring it back into the community, right? Like that's the big thing. It's just like it's not just for you, it's for everyone. Like
Right.
my trauma, when I was in trauma and acting in my trauma, all I did was traumatize people. But
Right.
now that I'm in my recovery, I need to help people recover, right?
Right.
I gotta give that away too.
Yeah. I love that. Now, why is authenticity like terrifying at first?
I think that maybe people don't really want to accept who they are because of
Yeah.
all the everybody telling you who you should be. Right?
Right.
And if you don't fit in any of these little markers here, then you feel
Yep.
like, oh, I can't let them know about this thing.
Yeah.
When, you know, and that's why we start to live unauthentic lives. And that's torture,
Oh,
right?
yeah.
That's why people get to be in their middle age. And there's this horribly hate life and everything is because they've been just living on unauthentically, right?
Yeah.
So being the ability to be real and accept. And for me, it's come from humor.
Yeah.
Humor was a big thing. Being able to laugh about myself, which is one of the things my dad gave me.
Yeah.
My dad gave me a great sense of humor and the ability to make fun of myself. And always remember that I can hear his voice constantly. When I do stupid things, it helps me remember who I really am.
Right. I love that. Now, when someone rebuilds the right way, what are they actually rebuilding?
For me, it was character. And here's what I mean is like a solid foundation of principles. For me, for my recovery, it was honesty and integrity. Okay.
Right.
And what I mean by honesty is that my words match reality.
Yeah.
Now, there are times when I don't want to tell the truth. So you know what I do? I shut up. Okay. Like, I'm not saying you have to tell everybody everything. I'm just saying don't speak things that are not true. There's a
Right.
difference. Okay. There is a difference.
Yeah.
So learning, and I did that while I was facing 600 years in prison. I was facing 600 years, and I made a commitment. I said, from now on, anything that comes out of my mouth is going to be reality. And if it's not that way, I just don't speak.
Right.
Now, integrity is making my actions match my words. So
Right.
if I say something, or even more importantly, here's the important part. If you say you are a specific type of person, be that person,
Yeah.
right? That is where we really get messed up in our integrity, is we claim I'm this guy and I do this and this is the kinds of things, and then it's time to do that thing, and you're not that about that,
Yeah.
then that breaks us. I think that
Right.
really it helps in our degradation, right? It starts to break down how we feel
Yeah.
about ourselves, which is a huge part of it too, right?
Yeah.
Self-esteem is huge in maintaining your wellness. Everybody talks
Right.
about physical stuff, and I got a meditation in, and I did this and that. And like, you need to also manage how you feel about yourself, right? Spend
Yeah.
time with yourself, enjoy yourself, look at the good things you
Exactly.
do, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then, so honesty and integrity, and then accountability, which means that I still make mistakes. Okay, I'm
Right.
15 years in recovery. Sometimes I say things that I shouldn't. Just the other day, I had to apologize and take ownership on something I said while I was upset and frustrated. It still
Yeah.
happens. We're going to do that. We're humans.
Oh,
Just
yeah,
be
of
accountable
course.
for it. Don't
Yeah.
blame anybody else. Take responsibility. It came out of your mouth. I don't care what they were doing. If it come out of your mouth, bro, you're the only one who controls that. That's all you.
Exactly.
And then
Exactly.
responsibility, which is that I have the ability to respond to situations rather than just react.
Right.
On stuff. And so those cornerstones of principles, and at first I had to do it on an hourly basis. Like literally
Yeah.
go, okay, is this me being honest? Or is this living in integrity, Cameron? And I had to go back, move myself back. So it's small adjustments. Here's
Yeah.
the standard. This is what integrity is. And then I have to keep trying to live myself up to that level.
Yeah.
And at first it's a struggle. And I did this on the inside of a prison. So I started to rebuild myself with these building blocks, if
Right.
you will, right? These eternal building blocks, putting them inside me on a daily basis. Hey, Cameron, is this being responsible? Is this being accountable? Are you being honest? Yeah. So for me, that's really, I think that gives you a more solid life. Now, I know people who are sober and they're still really not happy. They're
Right.
not leading healthy lives.
Yeah.
They're still, angry a lot. They still struggle. And the reason I think that is because while they're not using any substances,
Yeah.
they haven't intentionally recreated themselves to be
Right.
somebody that they love and respect and feel good about.
Yeah. 100%. Now let's get tactical. So if someone's listening and is in a mess financially or emotionally or relationship-wise, like where do they begin? Like not the 10 steps. Like what's step one? Like is it ownership? Is it structure? Is it community, sobriety, therapy, or spiritual grounding? Like walk us through your framework for like rebuilding yourself.
Introduction, I would introduce to some principles. Well, first, I love this. This is another quote by Jim Rohn. He says that anything that can be measured can be improved. And so the first step of improving anything is take a measurement.
Right.
And so if you're, like you said, if they're not like their life is in a complete mess and all these bad things are happening that you hear all the time, go make an assessment about where your life can be improved. Talk to your
Right.
family, talk to the people that are around you on a daily basis, talk to your coworkers, right? Take an assessment
Yes.
about from other people's opinions, like who am I? What's going on? How do you feel? Then
Right.
start there. Then once we have a ground reading, and the thing is trying to find people who can be honest with you and say, oh
Yeah.
yeah, Cameron, you're a real ass sometimes. Yeah, you shouldn't drink, And then once we do that, create value.
Yeah.
We, as human beings, we don't like to do things that suck. So this is another great quote is when the promise is strong, the payment is easy. Okay. So what you got to do is you got to make the promise strong to you,
Yeah.
right? You got to make it valuable. Like
Yeah.
if you're gonna have to do something that takes intention, attention, time, energy,
Yeah.
then you have to say, man, I really want this thing. Because
Right.
if you decide, man, I really want this thing, this is great, I'm gonna get it,
Yeah.
then you will make the sacrifices that it takes to get there. Right? Just like you
Right.
were telling me earlier that we drew this life out we wanted, right? We said, okay, this is really what I want. But I have to emotionally connect to it on a daily basis so
Yep.
that I want to go through the hard work necessary, the
Yeah.
rejections, the sacrifices, the 20-hour days or 18-hour days we have to put in, right?
Yeah.
All that has to be of value to us.
Okay.
So when and for me in my program, that's one of the first things we try to do is find where the value is for the client, right?
Right.
Somebody's coming in new to recovery. What are you interested in? Talk to me, right? We make a connection. There's this great TED Talks. It's by this guy by the name of Johann Hari, and it's called Everything You Know About Addiction Is Wrong. And
Yeah.
in there, he says the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it's connection.
Yeah.
And we follow that 100. I found that in my own life, and it works in here. So the first thing we try to do is make a connection with somebody,
Yeah.
and then we try to find value for them. And because at
Right.
first, a lot of the people we work with are in the justice system,
Yeah.
so they are only doing it because they don't want to go to prison, right? At first, there's that. Unfortunately, there's that dichotomy where if
Yeah.
you force people into treatment,
Right.
you don't know why they're there,
Yeah.
right? And I'm here to tell you, folks, you cannot co coerce somebody into recovery. You can lock them up so and they get sober, but right after they're done locking them up, they're going to go right back.
Right back to.
Recovery is a personal decision. They have to want it, but you can't coerce it, but you might be able to inspire it. And that's the
Yeah.
difference, right? So
Oh, yeah.
back to your question, you know, any people, any of your viewers who are going through this with a family member, the best thing you can give them is a better version of yourself.
Yeah.
Start to work on you first before you start to work, try to work on them, right?
Yes.
So maybe you're a better listener now. Maybe you have more finances you might be able to help them with. Maybe you know, whatever it is. When we become more, we have more to give. Does
Right.
that make sense?
Oh, it makes 100% sense.
Sometimes I
Yeah.
get rambling a little bit. Sorry, I'm a real passionate
No,
about
you know,
this.
you're looking at it from a different perspective. I don't think people always look through, you know, at it through that perspective. You know, they're looking at the person to change, but we have to look at ourselves too. And, you know, we are their mentors. We're the people around them. You become the seven people around you, the person you become. So if you're around a recovering addict or someone that's trying to get help and change their life, you have to be their mentor. You have to give them, you know, you have to show them what life sober and what life, you know, in recovery looks like and feels like. Even if you didn't
Truth.
experience, you know, going through, you know, any type of addiction, you have to be a mentor and you have to give them the guidance and the advice that will kind of, you know, give them the strength, the ability to see life in a different angle.
Yeah, lead by example, right? And then
Exactly.
also, and have a lot of energy to give, right?
Yeah.
Like these people are depleted. They are starving for any kind of energy or attention or any
Yeah.
validation, right? If you have the capacity to not only be able to take care of your own yourself, but
Right.
have more to give to somebody else,
Yeah.
that can like pump the well. Like
Oh,
the truth
yeah,
is that they have
sure.
to learn how to fill their own cup, but at
Yeah.
first you might have to prime it a little bit, right? Where you
Oh
put a little
yeah.
in there, like, okay, we get this thing running again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. Now here's the hard part. People rebuild, then they sabotage. You know, we're just talking about that. You know, like so why are they you know, why are they addicted to chaos? Why do they keep going back when they know life isn't good on the other side and they get a taste of sobriety, they get a taste of recovery, but then boom, they're right back to chaos.
So for me, and I did that. I was a self-sabotager. I mean, I'm at some of the craziest times did I just go left and screw up my entire life. And having to look back at that, that came back from some early childhood beliefs that
Yeah.
I had to untangle.
Right.
I had some family members. I was one of the I was the only bastard grandchild of my mom's side of the family. And my grandfather let me know it. And so I had to untangle that and recognize that he doesn't get to dictate how I feel about myself. Right?
Right.
He doesn't get to do that. The only thing that dude was revealing was how he felt about me. He doesn't get
Right.
to, he didn't get to, he doesn't dictate who I am or how I should feel
Exactly.
about myself or nothing. But that did take a long time to work itself out, right?
Yeah.
I think that those were the big the sabotages was that old
Yeah.
broken record. But the chaos, I learned how to survive in the chaos, right? Not only, but thrive. Once you're in it long enough,
Yeah.
you become immune, right? We have these guardrails, these boundaries, the shields up that allow us to operate in those situations. And it's comfortable.
Yeah.
We know how to do it. And so we go back to that.
I love that. Now, do you think also it, you know, peace is unfamiliar to them? So maybe that's one of the reasons.
Truth, it was for me. It's funny how life works, right? I found that though in a jail cell. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
I when I was fighting this last case, I spent like 10 months in a single cell by myself.
Wow.
And it was in early recovery, so this was like the first 11 months of my recovery.
Yeah.
And but it gave me the space and the silence to
Yeah.
sit with myself again and find me through
Yeah.
all of it, right? As all of that chaos started to leave me, you
Yeah.
know, the drama and the struggle and the gunfights and the all of it
Yeah.
started to leave, and I could just be quiet with myself. Even with at that point, like I said, I was looking at 600 years. Like it was like a horribly traumatic time of my life, but I can remember that sitting in that jail cell laughing and giggling to myself and having a great time after I reconnected with my childhood and who I really was and who I wanted to be. And I began to accept, right?
Yeah.
Acceptance is so powerful. And we just accept, okay, this is the way things are, Cam. You did
Yeah.
this. But that doesn't dictate what's going to happen in the future.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you think sometimes guilt like creeps back in?
Yeah, it's still definitely, I still have struggle with it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was just mentioning with my kids,
Yeah.
watching them struggle, and then even doing damage currently. So, the truth is, I'm 15 years in recovery, but I still have character defects. I'm a human
Yeah.
being. My daughters both came in back into my life. And then one of them left again because I was triggering her. And it wasn't like intentionally trying to do it, but
Yeah.
I felt a lot of guilt about that. I felt like that, the truth is, though, I don't get to decide those things. She has her own process. I have to accept responsibility for the man I used to be and the man I still am,
Right.
right? And take action. Now that I've accepted, okay, you're right, Cameron. You shouldn't have raised your voice in that situation. What are you doing? Like, why
Right.
did you let your emotions get the better of you? How can you keep that from happening in the future?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So it's a
Interesting.
struggle sometimes. Like, I have decades of karma to still deal with, right?
Right. I think we all
But
do.
you know the story about the Japanese bowls, right? With that they so there's a tradition in some Japanese homes where if they break a bowl, they glue them back together with gold.
Oh,
And
really?
it basically turns them into a work of art, right? And so that's kind of how I see my life as becoming is right. Look, I did destroy it. I shattered that.
Yeah.
At one point in my life, everybody had walked away from me. For 4 years, I was in prison. 4 years, didn't even get one letter because I had burned all of my bridges. But today, I'm able to piece those things back together with this material, right? With this
Yeah.
intention, with attention and time and love and support. And it does come back together. Takes a little bit,
Yeah.
but for me, I think it's almost more beautiful than it was to begin with.
Right. Now,
Like,
do they miss the identity they had, even if it was a destructive identity?
that's actually, you just hit right on something. So when my oldest responded to me, she said, "Dad, I had accepted that you were just going, I figured you were just going through your own stuff a long time ago. I forgave you a long time ago. But the only reason I'm talking to you today is because you didn't give up, right?
Right.
And because I kept trying to become better. I kept trying to reconnect with them.
Yeah.
And then after talking with her, she said, "Dad, I wouldn't want to be anybody else." She
Right.
said, "I love who I am today. And yeah, it was hard. And those were some bad things, but it's created who I am today. And I love me."
Right.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's actually an internet influencer herself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's called the heart-centered woman.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. She has a podcast and she does stuff. So she's a pretty amazing lady.
That's awesome. Now, why is becoming the new version of yourself harder than staying broken?
It's scary,
It is
right? Right?
scary.
Yeah, well, everybody fears change. But I think once you get past that, like there is some level to it, but it does require, so there's things that have to go into place, right? So not
Yeah.
only do you have to want to, right? But then you actually have to have the energy and the time and the attention to apply to yourself.
Right.
And then you got to actually have the material,
Yeah.
right? Are you being exposed to the truth? Do
Yeah.
you know that you are the creator of your own life? Or do
Oh,
you
yeah.
maybe you've heard it, but do you actually believe it? Right? That's a big thing
Exactly.
too, right? You have to keep exposing them to the truth And then they have to accept it as reality too. Right? Okay, maybe
Yeah.
I can. Can I tell you a little story about that?
Oh, 100%, yeah.
So when I got to Buena Vista in 2012, I was 43 years old and I had just got a 30-year sentence, 30-year crime of violence sentence, which means
Wow.
that I would have to do 20 years before I could see the parole board, which means I'd be 63 before I'd ever get out of prison. And
Wow.
I started to despair, right? I thought I was going to die in prison, but I had read some books, right? The Power of the Subconscious Mind, The Master Key System, The Secret, Asking It Is Given, all these different things that were starting to reveal the truth to me in different wavelengths.
Yeah.
And so I took a little piece of paper and I wrote some words on it and I stuck it next to my cell door. And I committed myself to saying them every time I walked through the door. And these were the words, things always work out for me. Okay. And I didn't believe it at first. Okay.
Yeah.
I had 30 years to do, or at least 20. But, you know, in Buena Vista, you're locked down a lot. So you get out, you go through your door a lot. So I was probably saying it 5 to 10 times a day.
Right.
And every time I said it, I would think the words. And so through neuroplasticity, I started to reshape my neural network, right?
Yes.
This thought created a feeling inside of me called faith.
Oh, wow.
And faith then led me to try to do things differently, right? Like you have
Yeah.
to believe it's possible. Right. I've
Right.
got a lot. Look at I went to prison 4 times before that, just on short sentences. And I used to look at the guys with long time and I was like, what is wrong with that dude? Right. Because they'd walk down with their shoulders, their head was down. Those years have weight. Like I'm telling you, man, you got years to pull. It's a weight on your shoulders. And I felt
Yeah.
it finally. Like after I got hit with that sentence, I was like, oh man. But this thought began to reshape my mind. And
Yeah.
then give me the feeling that I could make a difference in my own life. And that's
100%.
why, like, this is our card we give to all of our clients. We put them everywhere, man. And I promise you,
Yeah.
if you start saying this, if you say this 10 times a day, the next time you see me, you're gonna be, man, that feels so much better. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not gonna just change the world. Like, it's not like magic. Like, I know
Right.
some law of attraction people think that if you just think happy thoughts, magically, stuff comes to you. It's like it doesn't really work like that. You think
Yeah.
better thoughts, you feel better, and then you act differently, and then you get different things. That's how it
Yeah.
works. Yeah.
That's amazing.
I was reading your website, and it talked about your introduction to gratitude, right? And how that has improved your life. Same with mine too, right? So in Buni, I started a gratitude list. They turn on your lights in your cell at 6 a.m., but they don't let you out for breakfast until 7. So you have an hour, right? So that
Right.
hour, I would make my coffee and I'd sit there quietly in my cell and I would write down 3 things I was grateful for every morning. Okay. The only caveat is that I couldn't use the same thing twice. So within like the first week, 2 weeks, all the easy things were gone.
Yeah.
And I used to have to spend the rest of my day looking for things to put on my list tomorrow morning.
Right.
And it shifted how I looked at my environment. And
Yeah.
because in prison, there's a lot of things you can complain about, right? A lot of people get stuck in this
Oh,
sucks and
yeah.
that sucks and, yeah, it does. It's prison. It sucks.
Yeah.
Or you can look at the things you're grateful for, no matter how regular they are. You know, I used to write down things. Oh, I'm so grateful for water fountains. I'm so grateful for shoelaces. It's not in that actual thing. It's the
Yeah.
changes that happen inside of you because you're looking for the thing, right?
Right.
Because you're looking for the gratitude, it changes you, man. It doesn't change the prison. Prison still sucks. I don't recommend it. Just for all of your viewers, I know it's not like the brochure, guys. Don't go, okay?
Now, I want you to paint the picture for me. Like when someone is truly rebuilding from, authenticity, what improves? Is it their self-respect, their relationships, their stability, their confidence, their leadership? Like, do they lose people when they change?
Yes. And it's hard. It's really hard. Especially as you develop and grow and create a new self, like once you start to define who you are, right? And the definition is called boundaries, right? That's how you define how you are, folks. If you don't have boundaries, you don't have a defined self. You are into that. And I think that's a big problem in our society right now is people are lost about who they are, and that's because they don't have the boundaries they need in order to contain a solid self, a self opinion. But once you start to assert those boundaries, people will push away. And it's unfortunate. I had to look at people, like I had brothers that I had been through, like you don't even know, like real stuff, gunfights and trauma and bad stuff, and I had to look at them and tell them, man, I love you, but we can't hang out anymore. You know, as long as you're getting high. And they were like, "Hey, Cameron, what, you better than me now?" And I'm like, "No, brother, this is boundaries are for your protection. Okay, remember that, folks. Boundaries are not a judgment against anybody else. I love them. They're still good men, but I have to hold those boundaries because I can't take a risk at going back again." That's it. I'm so blessed to be out of prison to begin with, or and to have my life back connect. I have to hold these boundaries. It's just for me. But it's hard to lose people.
How do you handle that?
Create new relationships, right? The truth. I accept that as well. That's just for my own, for me, I was real fluid in life. What I mean is I was kind of like a chameleon. A lot of people, like maybe they hang out with one little clique or circle of people. I hit them all. Like I would go everywhere. I'd hang out with these people for a few months and then go run up here on the north side of town, and I'd be over here and I'd be over there. And I was just everywhere. I was just real fluid. And For me, in my path, my understanding about what life is about is that people come and go. It's have you ever read the book Siddhartha? Do you know
No, I
Siddhartha
haven't.
by Hermann Hesse? It's great. It's about the early years of the Buddha, and he talks about the river, right? And the river is just an analogy of life and how you sit by the river and things flow and you get to experience them. But then if you try to hold on to them, that's when the damage is caused, right? If you just let things come in and you experience and flow with them, and then you let them go. And life just becomes this nice, easy flow if you do it like that. It's when we try to either hold on or dam it up or do anything like that, that resistance causes stress in our life, causes, disease, causes all kinds of problems when we just let it come and go, man. It's just life.
It's very true. So, what does it feel like when you wake up aligned with who you are?
I'll let you know when that happens. No. Well, this is great. I don't want to ever say you just get in alignment and then you stay there. That has not been my experience, because things pull us in and out, right? Things that are going on either in society, things that are going so inside my family, things that are going inside my business. So I get pulled out of alignment. I still have some of my old character. I'm a warrior by nature, right? And so I want to go into battle, like anytime anything, there's any kind of like, no, dude, right? So I have to go back and remember, oh yes, let the river flow by, Cameron, right? And then I have to try to realign for a little while. So I think it's just you do your best, right? You do your best, and you just get that middle. You get those experiences. Sometimes you hit really good, and the truth is that life is hard and dangerous. Like that's what life is. It is.
So true. Now, let's give the audience something solid. Like, Cameron, can you give us three moves that someone can make this week if they wanted to start rebuilding their life?
Absolutely. Well, like I said, the first thing would be to take a measurement, right? Figure out what it is that you do want to change, right? Is it relationships you're struggling with? Are there finances? What's going on? What are you unhappy about, or what doesn't feel authentic, right? And then once you have a good, okay, this is not what I want. Now we can start looking for what we do want, right? So this actually happened in my cycle. So several times I got into recovery or sobriety for a few months. And what that was it was a really hard push to get away from what I didn't want anymore, right? I didn't want to go to prison. I didn't want broken relationships. I didn't want to be broke, right? Big push. I don't want this life anymore. And then once I got moved away from it, I would relax. But the truth is, I would just start sliding back towards it, right? And that's what kept happening. The difference this time is there was once again that big strong push. I don't want this. This is not happy. This is not working. Boom. Let's make changes. But after that push, I pivoted and I decided on what I did really want, and I got it out of my head, right? That's the biggest thing. If it's in your head, it is susceptible to improper memories, mood changes. Like, until you get it on paper, what you want is going to vary depending on what you ate that day, you know? So if you really want to make changes, the first thing, number one, decide what you're unhappy about. Number two, write out a mission statement, or a what does a perfect life, what do you want your life to look like? Then get a good night's sleep or two, and then go back and read it again. And you'll go, oh, this was weird. I didn't really mean this, but I want to move this over here and butter. This is really important. And I think this is because it's not just, you just don't pick one moment in time and have it all figured out, guys. You gotta, it's a process. You get it out there, you refine it a little bit, and then you make some adjustments. And just the simple act of you bringing it out of here and putting it on paper in order where you can adjust it can start to change you too, right? The first step of change is awareness, right? We have to be aware. And so bringing it out, and then for me, I always come back to this. This was huge for me, is the principles. If you go to our website, nasrecoverysolutions.com, we have a list of 24 principles that we started with. And then just learn what they are. Now that's not a complete list. There are any, and here's how you know what a principle is. Number one, it's universal, which means it's the same here as it is anywhere else in the world, right? Loyalty is loyalty, right? Honesty is honesty. You can't, what do you call somebody who's 99% honest? A liar, right? Right? Like, it either is or it isn't. And then start to read through and understand what different principles are, and then see which ones align with you. Like, what's more important to you? What do you want to emulate in your life? What do you want to put out? Then, once we start to institute principles into our character, into who we are, I think that gives us a real clear vision of how we express authentically, right? Because that's like when we're in alignment with our principles and our values, because values are subjective, right? Values change, values waver. But when we align them, when our values are a reflection of our principles, that's where we feel solid, right? That's where we feel in congruency, right? Heart, mind. This is leadership. So getting in touch with who you really are to find out where you want to go in life or who you really want to be. But this is management. This tells you how to get there. So I don't know if that answered your question. I kind of went off in left field, but those first three
No, it
things, I
does.
would take a measurement, write down who you want to be or how you want to live, and then find the principles that emulate that and start to bring them into your consciousness, into who you are.
I love it. I love it. Now tell us a little about your services that you provide.
So we are an ASAM 1.5 level outpatient treatment program. We have specific licenses to deal with the justice involved, but we work with anybody who are suffering either SUD or mental health diagnoses. But my vision, my model, I kind of flipped the script. Most outpatient treatment programs, they will offer you clinical services, therapy, and classes and stuff with a clinician, and then maybe they'll offer a peer support while you're in the building or something like that. And I really believe in what Johan had to say about connection. And so what we try to do is we build connection with our peers first. So I have like 20 lived experienced coaches who go into these facilities and different programs and make connections with the clients because they were once in addiction and in prison themselves. And once they establish and can make a connection, and what they're really doing is they're filling their cup. This is where I get that. Like, they're spending time individually and in workshops with them, hearing what they have to say, giving validation to the things they've experienced, giving them attention and energy, and starting to fill their cups so that when they do get to the clinical therapy, which I'm not saying we're replacing it, we don't replace it at all, but we want to prep them first. So they can actually take advantage of the treatment when they get to it, right? The truth is, we waste billions probably of dollars on treatment services for people who don't want to be there. It's unfortunate, but unless they're ready, unless they want it, they're not going to get it. Now, I'm not saying you completely starve them out and don't give them anything, but what I do say is invest in prepping them. So when they get to the place where they can get the services, that's what they get. So that's what we really specialize in.
I
We
love
do
it.
one-on-one coaching. We do psychoeducational workshops. We really believe in activity and action. So a lot of my coaches are CrossFitters. So we'll have a SUD workshop, and we'll talk about how we live authentically in our recovery, and then we'll go do some clean and presses. Right? Let's go actually do something with that. Like, we just don't gonna sit in a classroom. Let's go out and do something and lock that into our body. Our body keeps the score, right? This is where you store your trauma. This is where we need to infuse our healing. So we're also big in community and activity. It's not just cognitive. We believe in mind, body, and soul. So we want to provide the cognitive psychoeducational programming as well as lifestyle life skill changes, right? Nutrition and exercise and health and wellness and all those things, and then help them find themselves spiritually and connect with some sort of faith or nature. We take them out into nature, man. Let's go hang out in some of these guys, man. They haven't been out in the woods or up in the mountains, and they live in beautiful Colorado. Dude's lived here for 25 years. He hasn't been out up in the mountains in 20. It's like, man, let's go hang out. Let's go look at the squirrels, man.
I love it. Now, for the listeners, I want you to know that you are not your worst decision. You are not your lowest moment, but you are responsible for who you become next. Rebuilding your life isn't about image, it's about integrity. And if this conversation hit home, don't ignore it. We're going to include Cameron's information in the show notes. So if you want to learn more about his work, go into the show notes. All the information will be there. And if this episode gave you the clarity that you need, follow the show. We're not here to entertain, we're here to help people rebuild. And I just got to say, Cameron, I am so grateful for having you on the show today. You were amazing. And I just think, I really commend you for, you went through a lot in life. You overcame all those obstacles, and you were able to strive and become the person you wanted to become, and you didn't let anything get in your way, and you stuck to it. You created out your plan, and you focused, and you create, and you just headed straight towards the rainbow at the end. And you hit that rainbow, and I just have to commend you. I really, really admire what you're doing with your life and how you turned your life around. And now you're helping so many others turn their life around. Because when it comes to addiction, it's really hard to get somebody to change their life and stay consistent. It's a day-to-day battle. It's a day-to-day, struggle. And you have to strengthen yourself, and you have to really make your person the person you want to be, so you can be proud of yourself. And there's a lot of steps to it, and you did it, and you're helping tens of thousands of people out there do it. So I just want to say thank you. Thank you for being who you are. Thank you for what you're doing. And thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much, Stacy. It was a pleasure to be here.
Oh, you're very welcome. You have a great day.
You too.